We are holding court for 1,200 days, about the middle of the onwards. We started talking about yesterday a case where brothers divide up their inheritance using a girdle. The reason we brought it in, again, that's sort of a side thing to our Gemara. We're bringing it in because further in the Sugya, which we'll learn today, we're going to discuss a topic that we talked about a couple of days ago involving when you're buying grain, and you sub a shlosh, kurva shlosh, and sub a sela, where you mentioned the two different lashonos, that you meant you're buying a kurva for 30 sela, and you're mentioning that you're buying a sub for a sela, which one takes precedence, et cetera, what we talked about the other day. We're going to be bringing that in again in this connection. So, Itman, Shnei Achan Shecholku, if you have two brothers who divided up their inheritance, Ubalahan Achman Medina Sayyam, and then a third brother showed up from overseas. They didn't know their father may have gone overseas there and had and then gotten remarried and had a child there, and their father didn't know he existed, or they didn't know he was still alive, whatever it is. They had made the division, and now all of a sudden this third brother shows up. So before we had, for example, let's say the Rashbam says the situation was you had, let's say, six fields. Each of them took three. Now instead we're going to have to redivide it among the three of them. How do we do it? Rav says we completely cancel the original division because obviously then the original division was incorrect because one brother was missing. So we undo the whole division and they start all over again and divide it into three portions and make a girdle. This that we said yesterday, that the girdle is binding, that's where they did a proper division. Here they didn't do a proper division because there was a third brother there which they didn't take into consideration. Or Shmuel and Mekamtzin. Shmuel says what we do, instead, we don't undo it, Mekamtzin. So what does Mekamtzin mean? The Rashbam explains like this. Again, this scenario, you have, let's say, six fields, so each one got three. What we do is, each one takes one of his fields and gives it to this new brother who showed up. So that way, then, so he has a share equal to theirs. But in other words, we don't undo the girdle and the division that we did to begin with. We take Mekamtzin, like we take out a piece from each one of them to give to him until he has a portion equal to theirs.
What do we take, David?
Again, we have six fields to begin with. What do we take? Idis Ben and Idis. Okay, so according to the Rashbam, it would seem that it could be whatever they want. It almost sounds like he doesn't specify.
Right.
So Tosfos brings up the point that even if they do figure out fairly and they give him what would be equal in Bainanus or whatever they give him, why shouldn't he have the ability to say, look, you guys got with a girdle. Why is it that you should have unilaterally be able to give whatever you feel is right? I hold that, for example, a certain other piece of the property is more important to me, is more valuable to me, or whatever. We had such a concept earlier in the Masechta, Malim Kinechta de Bar Merion, that I consider this particular piece of property to be as valuable as the fields of Bar Merion. Why doesn't he have the ability to say that? So therefore, Tosfos rather explains that Mekamtzin means like this. It's true Shmuel saying we don't undo the girdle completely, but what we do is like this. We do make a new girdle. Then what we do is as follows. If the girdle tells us that this third brother is going to get, so what we do is like this. So we have let's say three fields. Or okay, if we want to make it the same as the Rashbam scenario, we have six fields, let's say. So what they had done is each of them had taken three fields, Tosfos says. So each of them took two whole fields and then they split the third one between them. Now what they do is they make another girdle. If the third brother winds up getting that field that they split, fine. They take that field that they had split between them, they give it to him, and each one keeps their remaining portion from before. If instead the girdle winds up that he gets one of the other two fields, then what we do is we still don't undo the whole original division. What we do is we have field one, field two, field three. Field one, let's say Reuven got field two, Shimon got field three, they split. Now when Levi shows up, if the girdle winds up that he gets field three, okay, he gets field three, and they keep their respective fields one and two. Let's say the girdle comes out that that Levi is going to get field two. So then what we do is they still retain, Reuben and Shimon retain their split of field three as it was. Reuben has half, Shimon has half. And then they also split number one in order that they each have one whole field. So in other words, as much as possible, we try not to undo the original division. That's what Tosfos is on the
field. In other words,
We split the fields, but in other words, that's how Tosfos understands Mekamtin. That's how Tosfos understands Shmuel Mekamtin. Unlike Rav, who's saying we completely void the whole original division and start all over again, Shmuel is saying we try as much as possible not to void the original division. To the extent that we can keep it the same as it was, then we keep it that way. That's how Shmuel holds. So, Amalei Rav L'Rav Nachman, L'Rav D'Amal Batla Machloikas. Okay, let's analyze this. According to Rav, who says that Batla Machloikas, that it's Batla, and we start all over again when the third one comes, Alma Hodr Dina, which means, in other words, that Rav will hold that even though this division may have been done legitimately in front of Beis Din or something, nevertheless, we would say that we undo the whole thing. If Ella may after, but by that logic, why would you say that? Let's say, for example, Hani Beit Plosa Jekaimi Va'adu, Hani Beit Plosa, if you have a partnership, if you have three brothers or three partners, let's say, Jekaimi Va'adu Beit Shreiminai, that two of them get up and go, Upolug, and they decide to divide up the estate or to divide up the partnership without the third one knowing about it. Now, they did divide it into three portions, and they did do a fair division. So you're going to argue if the third one shows up, Hachanami debacle machlokas. According to Rav, what's the logic? You would say because it was done without his consent, therefore the whole thing is canceled. No, as long as they fairly estimated, as long as they or the Beis Din who they did it in front of, whatever, fairly estimated what each portion is worth, then the third one doesn't have the ability to say that I want us to rejoin together in a partnership or in a state or whatever and start all over again. So why in this case over here, according to Rav, should we say that we do just that? It's not a question of a girdle, but still the point is with the girdle also, we're talking about they figured out fairly how much each portion is worth. They made sure that there are three equal portions over here. Okay, in the case of the brothers, they made sure there's only two because they didn't know that the Gemara was going to answer. Is that the difference? Is they didn't know that there was a third, but yeah. Tosfos similarly explains in accordance with their explanation from before. They also talk about that we're talking about. Let's say that they each divided up, so they each let's say took one field and they left the third one. So that when the third one shows up, they'll make a girdle on the whole thing. So now again, same idea. In other words, we would say if that third one winds up becoming his, then good. And if not, then we undo the thing as little as possible. So, but the point is, we don't undo it completely. Even Rav would agree to that. Why should it be different in our case? Why should it be different in our case over here?
Rav would agree with that.
Yeah. On this last case, because we have the Rashbam refers to a Gemara which we learned back in Rav Matzia in Eilat Matzias about that if you had a case over there where Safra was a partner with somebody and then went and divided the property of the partnership unilaterally. In front of a Beis Din, and there was a discussion over there, was he entitled to do that? So we said, as long as it was done in front of a Beis Din of three, even if it was a Beis Din head yotis, then that's fine, as long as it was a fair division.
No.
In our case over here, our case originally over here was we're talking about brothers divided up two, and they didn't realize that there's a third. The case of the partnership that we're talking about is that if Safra knew that he had a partner, in this case also, they know they have a third partner, so they did right. And we say, as long as... That's what the Gemara is going to answer, but the Gemara is assuming, for purposes of the question, that there's no difference since a fair division is a fair division. In other words, no, the question isn't, of course the difference is, of course the Gemara knows that the difference is in the case of the brothers dividing the estate, they thought there were only two of them, it turns out there were three. Fine, but the question is not, what the question is, still, Shmuel is being consistent. Shmuel is saying that is being consistent with that other case. Just like in that other case, we allow the division to stand. We don't. The third partner does not have the ability to come and say, "Well, it was done without my knowledge, so I don't accept the division at all. I want us to redivide." No, whatever was divided so far is divided so far. Why doesn't Rav hold the same thing? Why does he say we completely undo it and start all over again? That's the question. So the point is, we don't find any other daya in that connection. That if you divide it in front of a Beis Din, even a Beis Din Shel Yotis, then it's fine. So why all of a sudden over here, in the case of the brothers, is it different? The answer is the Gemara says Hachi Hashta. How do you think to compare the two cases? Hasam Nechisi Adaita Beit Slosa Meikara. In that case, when they went to divide up the partnership, they knew that there were three of them. When they went to divide it. When they went to divide it, they knew that there were going to be three portions.
Two brothers,
partners, it doesn't matter. They knew that there were three of them. They knew that there were three of them. So all it is so fine. All you have is the third partner or the third brother is arguing, I didn't know about it at the time. After all, and if he did know about it, we would have made the same division and we would have made the same girl. So in that case, then fine. Yeah, he was different. Here, the Chatzila, when they divided the property, they didn't know that there were three of them. They only divided it into two properties. So that's a wrong division. Each one took 50%, where they should have only been taking 33%. You can't say on that you should try to keep the division as much as possible. That's why Rav would make that distinction. Whereas Shmuel, again, is not making that. Shmuel is not making that distinction. The Rashbam points out, by the way, in the case of dividing up a partnership, we said over there in Bava Metzia, that if there was money or other things that have a known value, you don't even need an estimation. As long as it was a fair division, as long as you actually divided, that each person gets an equal amount of money, that's that. If you're talking about land or you're talking about goods where the value of it is not so obvious, then you need the Beis Din to be involved to actually figure out the correct value of it. All right. Now let's that establishes. So now we understand Rav's position. Now let's look at Shmuel's position. According to Shmuel, who says Mekamsin, again according to the Rashbam, that each one takes part of his portion and gives it to the other. According to Tosfos, that we make a new girdle, but we try to keep as much as possible the results of the old girdle. According to Shmuel, the Memra Dekamdina, which means to say, in other words, according to Shmuel, that we try as much as that we do keep the decision that was made as much as possible the same as it was. But Rav and Shmuel da Amitavayu. But don't we find that Rav and Shmuel both say this case that we've had before? Kur b'shloshim ani moch halach. If one person says to the other, "I'm selling you a kur for 30 seller," and he only says that. Either one can change their mind even when it comes to last sa, because it's one large sale of 30 sa. So therefore, until the 30th sa has been measured out and a kinyan has been done on it, there's no sale, there's no full sale yet. Therefore, either one can back out of the deal. But if he says kur b'shloshim sa b'sela ani mochalach, but if he says I'm selling you a kur for 30 sela, where it's one saw per seller, ani mochalach rishon kana, then each one as he receives it, he's kana. The point is, in other words, we see that here in the case of the estate, then Shmuel is saying whatever you already have. So Reuven got three out of the six fields. Shimon got three out of the six fields. Now we're saying, fine, each one has to take one of his fields, one of these six, and give it to Levi. But we're not saying that we take away fields one and two from Reuven and fields three and four from Shimon and start all over again. Whatever you have, you already have. Why, in the case of the kur b'shloshim, why would we say that we can take away from him the 29 saw that he already has in his possession? We should argue that you should leave things as much as possible the way they are. So fine, he can undo, let's say, the 30th saw because there hasn't been a Kenyan on that yet, but he should be able to keep the 29. No, so he's being inconsistent.
Right.
That's the question. Yes, it's inconsistent. On the face of it, that means in the case of the kur b'shloshim saw the seller, we're saying hodur dina, we do undo the whole thing. Why not over here? The reason is that's the asking point of Shmuel. Rav is being consistent. Rav is consistent with his din. Shmuel is not. The answer is chosam over the rabbanon milsa the nichalei the moichah the nichalei the keach. Because when it comes to buying grain, when it comes to the kur b'shloshim, the rabbanon figured out like this. We want to make the situation in a way that it'll be better for the moicher and better that the moicher would prefer it and the lekeach would prefer it. Namely, in other words, both the moicher and the lekeach want to be able to keep their options open. They want to be able to, if the prices go up and down, they want to be able to back out of the deal because it won't be advantageous for them anymore. So therefore, until you did meshicha on the whole 30 sa, then the chachamim figured out that they would want to have the ability to renege, they would want to have the ability to back out, and therefore we allowed that for them. As opposed to when it comes to dividing up karka, or when it comes to dividing up an estate, or dividing up a partnership or whatever, each one wants to get out of it as fast as possible. Because, that Ashram points out, the psychological thing, that if you have like the expression the Gemara mentions in a few places, a pot that belongs to partners is neither hot nor cold. We had it earlier in our Masechta. Like, in other words, when each one figures the other one will do, each one passes the buck to the other one, and nothing ever gets done. So therefore, once they decided to divide up a partnership or to divide up the estate, they'd rather have the ability to go through with it, and not that somebody is going to be able to come and say later on, let's undo it and start all over again. That's why Shmuel says, given that, therefore, so Reuben and Shimon, at the time, the first two brothers, they didn't know Levi existed at the time. So they divided up the property thinking it's just the two of them. Now when Levi comes, fine, Levi is entitled to a portion of the estate, sure. But Shmuel will say, not because of that are we going to undo the whole division. Because we evaluate that they wouldn't want to do that. They would want that as much as possible, what's already done is done, and that way we can start working our own individual field, and that way we're not passing the buck and relying on each other and nothing happens. Okay.
So
he's being consistent. Right. So he's to that extent, yeah. There's a different explanation that some of the Rishonim say, that when you come to grain, if you're saying kur b'shloshim, usually people don't necessarily buy and sell grain in small quantities like that, like a saw at a time. If you're saying a saw at a time, that's fine. But ordinarily, you want to buy, each one wants the whole kur. Either the mercer wants to keep his kur, or the lakeah wants to get his kur. They don't want to. So that's what we mean. In other words, that Abanan figured out, that the Chachamim figured out, that people are not going to want to break off the deal in the middle, and I'm going to end up with a half a kur, and you're going to end up with a half a kur, which is not really useful for wholesale anyway.
Okay. That's why we keep it.
And that's why we keep it. That's why we say it's an all or nothing deal. As opposed to with Karka, it's reasonable that they want to get it over with. Each one will have a field, each one will have two fields or whatever. Yeah. All right. It's fine. Now we have another discussion on related to this. We're gonna get to the conclusion in Halacha in the middle of the Amud. We're gonna get to who the Halacha is like, Rav or Shmuel. Okay. So it's fine. First we have another discussion, which we've had actually in Bava Kamma before. Also relating to this issue of brothers who divided up the inheritance and then something happened. But here it's different. Ach and Shechol, if brothers divided up their estate, actually both of these cases we've had in Bava Kamma as well. Anyway, so the brothers divided up their estate. Now a Baal Choy, who their father owed money to, came and took one of the portions. So now that brother comes to the other brothers and says, hey, I'm left out in the cold over here, I don't know. I'm left out in the cold over here. I don't have anything. You should be compensating me. After all, our father, it was our mutual father who owed it. Now, Tosfos brings up the question, how can he come from only just one brother? Exactly. Shouldn't he have to come evenly from all the brothers? So Tosfos answers that, so there's a few different answers in Rishonim. Tosfos answers that we're talking about that suppose this particular field that he got had been designated an apotiki. So it was designated as this is the field that's meant to be, that the loan is meant to be paid off from.
Why it belonged just to one brother?
It so happens the one brother took it. He didn't realize there was an apotiki, or maybe even he realized and he figured the other brothers will compensate him. Anyway, that's one answer. However, Tosfos points out, based on the Gemara is going to mention soon, that the Gemara is going to mention soon that the brothers have the ability to tell him that we would have paid him off with money, which implies we're not talking about an apotiki where we're saying this is the only vehicle of repayment. We're just saying, among all the fields, this is the one. But if you want to pay, if the father had told him, if I want to pay you money, I'm entitled to pay you money. I don't dafka have to give you a field. But if I'm going to give you a field, it's going to be dafka this one. Okay, that's one answer. There's a couple of different answers, a couple of other different answers among the Rishonim. The Ritva, I think it is, says it's talking about when a Baal Chayv collects from Yisoimim, we've learned before, he's only entitled to collect from Ziburis. So we can be talking about this particular brother got the Ziburis, and therefore that's what we're taking from him. So
that's why I was asking before.
Yeah. Okay, so that was the previous case. Here we're talking about a new case.
Right.
But yeah. Okay. So there's a couple of different answers like that. How it comes in, there's another answer that, okay, maybe technically the Baal Chayv is supposed to get from all of them, but let's say it so happened he took from one of them. Okay. Anyway. So Rav on the bottle machlokas. So again, Rav says, like in the previous case, in that case, we have to undo the whole division. We have to start all over again and make a whole new evaluation of the values of the remaining estate, consistent with his previous position, and make a new goyel all over again. Or Shmuel on the viter. Whereas Shmuel says that no, he lost. That's it. It's his problem. He lost. He's not entitled to any compensation from the brothers. No. Well, we'll see. We'll see soon why each of them holds the way they do. But Rav Asi, here we have a third opinion. Rav Asi comes in and says, "Noita revia b'karka, revia b'mois." He gets one quarter in karka, and or one quarter in mois. The Rashbam understands the vav over here to mean or. There's a couple of other Rishonim, including the Rambam, who understand it to mean and. Because vav sometimes can mean and, sometimes can mean or. Right. Okay. So yeah. So first let's read the Gemara what the basis of each of their opinions is, and then we'll talk about specifically what Rav Asi means by Revi'a B'Karka or Revi'a B'Moris according to the different opinions. So Rav Amar Batla Machlokas, because it happens to be that it's the same thing as the previous case, but it's not for the same reason actually. It is the same dini, same Batla Machlokas, but it's for a different reason, and that is Kasavar Ha'achem Shacholku Yershinei. He holds that when brothers divide up the estate, they're considered yoshim. In other words, as opposed to Shmuel is going to say they're considered like lakuchos. We've had this machlokas in various places before. We had it in Gittin, for example, in connection with the issue of what do they do in Yovel, for example. We had a number of different places in the Gemara. We talked about this machlokas of whether they're yoshim or lakuchos. Rav holds that they're considered yoshim, meaning, in other words, that they all have an equal responsibility to pay off their father's debt. And Rav, in particular, Rav holds yesh breva, which means once each of them gets his portion, retroactively, that means that was the portion that they were supposed to get in the first place. So in this case, it turns out that the Yerusha was done improperly because one of them had his portion taken away. All of them were really supposed to be on the hook for it, even whether it was an apotiki or not, whatever. The fact is it was all supposed to come equally out of all of them,
and only one was.
Therefore, they have to start all over again because the Yerusha was done improperly.
So Rav and Shmuel agree to dissolve the partnership, but for different reasons.
No, Raker, Shmuel is saying viter. Shmuel is saying that we don't dissolve anything.
What do we do then?
Shmuel said viter, that he loses. It's his loss. The Valchov came and took it away from him. Tough luck. He doesn't have any recourse against the other brothers. Why is that? He holds that brothers who divide up the property, who divide up the estate, are considered like buyers. Because Shmuel holds ein breira. Shmuel holds, what is it, at the time when their father died, we had, fine, you know, there's an estate, there's X number of brothers, let's first talk about Kulukuchatabu, then we'll talk about Kulukuchatabu, right? What does it mean, he says, that they're like buyers, meaning, in other words, like this, when the father died, fine, there's Reuven and there's Shimon, let's say there's two brothers, according to the Rashbam, actually, that is the situation we're talking about, but here specifically there's two brothers, so we know eventually it's going to be Reuben is going to get one portion of it and Shimon is going to get the other. But it's not like what does it mean? In other words, basically they're trading off with each other. You'll get this piece of land and I'll get that one in return for which I'll get that one. You'll get this part of the estate in return for which I'll get that part, etc. Whether it's Kauka, whether it's Mois or whatever. So therefore, it's like they're buying from each other. Now, when you're buying, fine. Usually there is a chayus. But in this case, ukolakeach shalai v'achrayus dami. In this case, furthermore, it is like you're buying without a chayis. Because usually, even though they are considered like lakuchos, usually when the brothers,
between themselves,
there's no chayis between each other, in other words, right? Achrayus meaning, in other words, what do you mean? I mean, achrayus means, in other words, that if the property gets taken away from one of them, the other one would have to compensate, and that's what achrayus is.
Right.
But in this case, even though they're considered makuchos, even though we're saying that effectively Reuben bought his portion in return for what he gave Shimon, and vice versa, neither one is accepting achrayus on themselves, because normally when brothers divide up an inheritance, they're not accepting, nobody's accepting achrayus. So the Rashbam doesn't have to. So the Rashbam points out like this. Now we've learned before. We learned in Bava Metzia.
The father accepted achrayus to the children.
What is the father? Who did the father accept achrayus to? It was all his property. It was all his property. There was nobody for him.
He had a loan on a field or something.
He had a lien on a field, means that, in other words, that Baal Chayav can come and take that field. There's no Achrayus doesn't come into play. If he sells a field to somebody else, sure, there'll be Achrayus. But, and that's the thing, the Rashbam points out like this. Usually we say, we've learned before in Rav Matiyah, we've learned elsewhere, we've learned in many other places, that the halacha is Achrayus tos sofer, that even if you didn't write anything in the Shtar about Achrayus, Achrayus is still assumed. However, the Rashbam says that's only when you're actually buying a field, when you're actually putting money down. Then a person doesn't just want to throw away his money. We assume that he wants Achrayus, that he bought it on condition that he's getting Achrayus, that he's getting some kind of insurance. In this case, nobody actually put down any money. Yes, we're saying that we consider them the kochos, that Reuven gave up his claim to this part of the field in order to get that field or whatever. He didn't actually put any money down. Therefore, there's a good logical reason to say that, look, there's no Achrayus involved over here. Some of them, of course, give a different point. They say, we're talking here according to Shmuel. Shmuel himself doesn't hold that Achrayus tos sofer. Shmuel holds that unless Achrayus is written, there isn't any Achrayus anyway. So therefore, fine, he's being very consistent with his own opinion. Anyway, so therefore, if you're a lekeach and it's shaloi b'achrayus, that's it. So then you took your chances and you gambled, you lost. That's it. What about Rav Ashi? Misatkele yoshin havu lekochasavu. Rav Ashi has a suffix between Rav and Shmuel's opinions. Are they considered like yoshim? In that case, then he would be entitled to. To his portion. He'd be entitled to his portion. So, or is he considered like a lakeach, and then nothing? Not his portion. He'd be entitled to half his portion, rather, because, again, we're talking about, according to the Rashbam, we're talking about there were two brothers over here. So the field that was taken away was worth 1,000. So, like this, 500 should have come from each of the two brothers. He's out 1,000 because he lost the field worth that much. Therefore, if we went according to Rav, he would be getting 500 worth of land from his brother. Or if he went according to Shmuel, he'd get nothing. So Rav Ashi, because he has a suffix, says we split the difference, therefore he gets 250. Now, how did he get that 250? Either when we say Revia Bakauko, Revia Hilkoch Netzel, Revia Bakauko, Revia Bamois, therefore he gets half in Kauka or half in Mois, meaning in other words, the other brother is entitled to tell him, look, fine, I can give you Kauka, or he can say, you know what, why should I have to give you from my Kauka? Let me give you money instead. That means you're going to be landless. Not my problem. You know what? If you had, you could have always paid off this guy with money. Nobody said you had to let him take the field. You could have come up with the cash and paid him. I also shouldn't be therefore responsible to lose part of my field to you. So fine, I'll give you money. You're going to be landless. Fine, you'll be landless, but at least you'll have half your money that you would have gotten. That's how the Rashbam understands it. Then he brings from Rashi in the sugya in Bava Kamma, but disagrees with him, which is that what we mean is what? No, Rabbi Bakauk or Rabbi Bamois. He takes. No. According to the Rashbam's explanation, according to the Rashbam's explanation, it should have said noitim. Yeah. Okay. Fine. I don't know. No, so that's it that he gets, I guess. Okay,
well, he takes
fine. No, but Bentin's point is that noitel implies that it's up to the brother who was nitraf, it's up to the brother who had to give his field away to the Baal Chayav, that he's the one who can decide whether he gets karka or mois. According to the Rashbam's explanation, it's not really like that. It's rather up to the other brother whether he wants to give him karka or mois. Okay, fine. Okay. Anyway, then the Rashbam brings from Rashi in Bava Kamma, who says that it means he actually gets everything. He gets the whole 500 back. He gets half of it as kalka and half of it as money. So, in other words, the Rav Ashi has a suffix, again, whether they're like Yoshim or like Lekochos. If they're like Yoshim, then he has to give him Tarka, because then they would have had to give this Baal Chayav Tarka and not Mois, or maybe not. Maybe they're like Lekochos, and he could have paid him off with money. So therefore, according to Rashi's explanation, the other brother does have to give him the full 500, but half of it in money and half of it in Tarka. The Rashbam says, I don't like that explanation. Then there's a third explanation, which is the Rif and a couple of the other Rishonim have a different Girsa in the Gemara over here. We're not talking about that. We're not talking about like the Rashbam was saying that we're talking only two brothers. We're talking about there are three brothers involved over here, and one of them was Nitra. So what happens is, and Rav Ashi has a double suffix. Number basically the two basically combine the two sfeikas according to the Rashbam and according to Rashi. Are they like Yerushim, and they, is it, do we go like Rav and he should be getting everything, or like Shmuel and he should be getting nothing? And even if we say that they're Yerushim, do we say that he should be entitled to Karka or to Mos? So therefore, so he gets to Revi'a B'Karka, so therefore in that case, he gets to Revi'a B'Karka or Revi'a B'Mos, because based on those two sfeikas, he gets half of what he, again, he gets half of what would have been, of what would have been coming to him, but half and half in Karka, half of that in Karka, half of that in Mos. So he gets not his whole portion then, no, because we're talking there were three brothers over here. He would see. If there were two brothers, then if there were two brothers, then you wouldn't have the double suffix over here, because then you
three brothers.
Seems so, but yeah, I think actually what the let me see. I think what the Rif says is he doesn't quite get all of his portion. Let me see what he says over here. So he says that what he does is he's getting half of what would have been his share if the Baal Chayiv hadn't come. He's getting half of what would have been his share, but of that half, one quarter. So in other words, he only ends up getting one half. Not like Rashi's explanation that he gets all of it. Closer to the Rashbam's explanation that he only gets half, according to Rabati, of what he would have gotten had there not been a Baal Chayiv involved.
So how much?
But again, according to the Rashbam, what it is he's only getting one quarter of what he's only getting one quarter of the estate, which is half of what he would have gotten
because of the
and either Karka or Mos. According to Rashi, he's getting the whole portion, half Karka, half Mos. According to the Rif, he's getting half of what would have been his portion, which is similar to the Rashbam's explanation. But within that half, he's getting half Karka, half Mos, which is more like Rashi's explanation. So it's sort of a blend of the two opinions. But still, according to the Rif, he's only getting half of what he would have had to begin with before the Baal Chayiv came along.
Regardless of the apportionment.
Yes, yeah. A quarter and a quarter makes a half, yeah. Okay. Amar Papa. In all of these dinim over here, the first one that we started talking about the brothers who divided and then a third brother showed up, the case that we just had now about the brothers who divided and then a Baal Chayiv came, in all these cases, Rapapa says the halacha is mekamtin, which means in the first case he holds like Shmuel, and in the second case he has a fourth opinion, not like Rab, not like Shmuel, not like Ravasi, but rather a fourth opinion that Mekamtin, that again, each one is going to have to take part of his portion and give it to this, actually it is more like Rab. It's similar to Rab, but not identical, because Rab would say, Bokha Machloikas, we have to start all over again. Rapapa is saying, I agree that he has to get his full portion, he can't just get a half or a quarter of his portion or whatever, like we were saying, according to Ravasi, and certainly not nothing like Shmuel, he does get all of it, but not by undoing the whole division and starting over, but rather by mechanism, by each one taking a portion and giving it to him. That's Rapapa. Amema am a Batla Machloikas. Amema says, no, the halacha is just like Rav in both these cases, Batla Machloikas, that's it, you undo the whole division and start all over again. The Hilchta Batla Machloikas and the Halacha is Batla Machloikas. So this is one of those, these are among those rare cases where even though it's Dini Mominus and it's Rav against Shmuel, the Halacha is like Rav, not like Shmuel.
Which is more,
okay.
It's more logical.
Okay, maybe. But yeah, so the Halacha is like Rav. There is actually, so we cancel everything. There is a little bit of a discussion among the Rishonim over the Tosfos first brings it up actually that not over here but in Gittin that on the one hand we paskin on the one hand we're paskining like Rav over here. On the other hand, in the discussion we just had whether the brothers are considered like Yerushim or whether they're considered like Lekuchos, we paskin like Shmuel. For example, as far as the dinim of Yovel, that when because we consider them the kohos, they have to redistribute everything in Yovel. So we're being inconsistent in that. And the Tosfos talks about in Gittin that even Rav, who says they're like Yoshim, doesn't mean they're 100% like Yoshim. There's a certain way in which even Rav will agree they have a certain din of Lekuchos. And therefore, or maybe not Rav agrees with that, but at least we can say that. So we can accept Shmuel's position that they have a certain degree of lekuchos, for example, as far as the dinim of Yovel, and yet accept Rav's position as far as the concept of batla machlokes, that for other purposes we consider them like Yoshin. Okay. Tana Rabbanan. We learned in a braisa, so now we're going to talk about another topic which isn't really directly connected to our Mishnah and our Gemara over here. The reason why we're going to bring it in is because it connects with what we learned yesterday. We mentioned briefly yesterday the topic of Shum HaDayanim, that there's going to be a situation where Dayanim have to evaluate the value of property in order to sell it or divide it or whatever. So now we're going to talk more about that, about what if different Dayanim value it differently. So turn it up on us. Shloisha Shiyodu Loshum. Three Dayanim went down to evaluate the value of a field, of property. Again, we're talking about, for example, that it's property of Yisoimim that has to be sold in order to raise money for food for the almana or the daughters or whatever. So therefore you need a base in to evaluate the value of it in order that it gets sold at a fair price. In some cases, instead, what they do is they put it up for public auction, and whoever pays the largest amount. But here we're talking about where for one reason or another that's not being done. We talked about Xubas various situations where you do one as opposed to the other. Okay, so Echad Omer B'mono, Shnayim Omer B'Masayim. So suppose one of them says that this field is worth a mono, 100 zuz. The other two say it's worth 200 zuz. Okay. Or the other way around. One says it's worth 200, and the other one says the other two say it's worth 100. Batul yachad, but we also say fine. In that case, the yachad is batul. After the rabbi mahatas, we go according to the majority. So whatever the two out of the three say is what we go by. What about if each of them says a different amount? Okay. What about if each of them says a different amount? One says that it's worth 100 zuz. The echad emer be'etrim. The other one says it's worth 20 sloim. Now a sela is 4 zuz. So 20 sloim would be 80 zuz. So one says it's worth 100 zuz. Another one says it's worth 80 zuz. The echad emer be'shloshim. And another one says it's worth 30 zuz, which is 30 sloim, which is 120 zuz. So you have 80, 100, and 120. What do we do? Nidud b'mana. So the Tanakhama says you say it's worth a mana. Okay, so we're going to talk about the Gemara, but actually there is a machloikis between the Rashbam and the Rambam. What we mean by that? In this case, you have to consider like this. One way of looking at it is that you have the Rashbam's way of looking at it is you have three different opinions. What you do is you go according to the median one, and statisticians call it not the average, which they call the mean, but rather the median, meaning you have a list of numbers, you rank them from least to most, or from most to least, or whatever, and you take the middle one. So in this case, it so happens that's also the mean, that's also the average of 80 and 100 and 120 happens to be 100. But let's say, for example, the third one, instead of 100, instead of 105, same thing. You would say it's 105 then. You would take the median, the median value between the three. The Rambam understands it not like that.
That's the Rashbam.
That's the Rashbam understands it that way. The Rambam understands it differently. He says that what it is you take the, according to the Tanakhama, you take the smallest value, you take the largest value, and you take the average of those two. So in this case, you have 80 versus 120, and the average of those is 100. So according to him, in other words, even if the third one had said 105, we would ignore that. We would say we would take the average between 100 and
the average.
It's close, but not necessarily exact. No. Anyway, that's according to the Tanakhama. Rabbi Elazar ben Tzadokim and Nidin B'Tishi. Rabbi Elazar ben Tzadok says that you evaluate it as worth 90. So again, we had 80, 100, and 120. Rabbi Elazar ben Tzadok is saying 90. We'll see in the Gemara how he gets to that. And Acherim, usually means Rabbi Meir, says that what we do is we figure out how much is the variation between them and we divide it by three. Meaning, in other words, that what we actually do is like this. The difference between the least value and the greatest value, 80 to 120, is a difference of 40.
Right.
40 divided by 3 is 13 and 1/3.
Right.
Therefore, we will take 13 and 1/3, add it to the smallest value, and we get 93 and 1/3.
It's the same as the median, isn't it?
No.
It's the same as the average.
No, the average would be the average of 80, 100, 120. The average of that would be 100. But Acherim are saying what we do is we ignore the middle value for reasons that we're going to say in the Gemara. We ignore the middle value, but nevertheless, the fact is he had an opinion over there. We take the difference and divide it by three because it was three days.
Add it to the smaller value.
And add it to the smaller value, and therefore you get 93 and a third. So far you have, in other words, as follows. According to the Tanakhama, you say it's 100, which again, according to the Rashbam, not necessarily 100. It would actually be whatever the middle one says. According to the Rambam, it would be literally 100 because you take the average of 80 and 120. According to the Belazar Reb Tzadik, it's 90. And according to Acherim, it's 93 and a third. So, let's figure out why each of them says what he said. The one who says, the Tanakhama who says you go according to the median value of the 100 is Milsim Mitziyasa. He just says you go according to the middle one. So again, according to the Rashbam, you go according to the median value, and according to the Rambam, you go according to the average of the smallest and the largest. Reb Lozer Reb Tzadik Amin Nidin Betishim. Why does Reb Lozer Reb Tzadik say you value it at 90? Because he figures like this. Ha'arapishin Shomer. In reality, we should figure this land is probably really worth 90. It's probably really worth 90. In other words, we should figure like this. We shouldn't assume, if we have three Dayanim over here, we shouldn't assume that one of them got it right and the other two are very far off. It's more logical to assume to minimize the error between one and the next.
So 80 and 100.
So we're leaving out the 120 for reasons that we're going to say in a second. So we ignore the 120 for the moment, and therefore we figure the one who said 80 and the one who said 100, each of them, but the point is, instead of saying like the Tanakhama word, that for example, the one who said 100 must have been correct, and each of the other ones under or overvalued by 20, Reb Elazar Reb Tzadik would rather say that we would assume that each one of them only under or overvalued it by 10. So leaving out the 120.
We're much closer to each other than between...
We would rather minimize the error bars. We would rather say that these guys are supposed to be experts after all. It's more logical to assume, rather than one of them punks hit it on the head and the other two are very far off.
Yeah, but which one you could choose between...
So that's what the Gemara is going to ask that in a minute, but wait. But for the moment, But right now, that's what we're saying. Essentially, this land is worth 90. Bahai Gekoma Estrim, so the one who said 20, Sloy, meaning 80 Zuz, Dekatoya, Sotolachore, fine, he undervalued it by 10. Bahai Gekoma Mona, and the one who said it's worth a Mona, which is 100 Zuz, Katoya, Sotolachame, okay, he made a mistake by 10 over. But we should average it out between the two of them. Now, let's learn this couple of lines of Gemara and then we'll talk about what the Rashbam says on it. So you can ask, Adraba, hi, Avam Meyabas Sora Shavya. Adraba, why shouldn't you assume that the land is essentially worth 110? The one who said it's 100 undervalued it by 10. The one who says 30, meaning 120, he overvalued it by 20. And ignore the one who said 80. Why should we go according to the lowest two rather than the highest two? The reason is, nevertheless, it's more logical to take the first two evaluations and accept those as a basis for evaluating it, because neither one is saying that it's worth more than a mana. Meaning, in other words, the Rashbam says basically it's a matter of tafasta merubah lo tafasta. Given that in other words, you have one guy who says it's worth more than a mana. You have two others who say it's worth a mana or less. The Rashbam says it's a matter of tafasta merubah lo tafasta. So according to the Rashbam, the key thing is not that the threshold is a mana. There are other Rishonim we'll learn like that. We'll talk about that in a second. According to the Rashbam, the key thing is not that the threshold is a mana. The key thing is to fast or double or to faster. We should the least amount that you can assume is what you go by. You have no reason to think that what you have is two of them who are saying this field is not worth more than 100. You have one against them who's saying that it's worth 120. So therefore, we mavassal him in the face of the other two. We know it's definitely not worth more than a mana.
It's true that there is 100 or more.
But that's why we need the tafasta merubah lo tafasta. When you have... What? We do, but on the other hand, we also want to make sure it's not misvalued, because remember, we said yesterday, if it's misvalued by a shtus, the whole thing is going to be void anyway. And then the almana, we have to look out for the benefit of the almana as well, after all. If we evaluate this property wrongly at 120, and we try to use it to sell for her mezonos, and it turns out it's only worth 100 after all that she loses out, we have to look out for her benefit also. Anyway, the point is, when we say tefasta merubah like tefasta means, the general concept we have in many places in Shas, if you have reason to think that something is a smaller number, and maybe reason to think that it's a larger number, and you don't really have solid proof one way or the other, better assume that it's a smaller number. Because the smaller number, it for sure is.
No.
In other words, if we have, again, one is saying it's worth 80, one is saying it's worth 100, one is saying it's worth 120, there's no question, therefore, we have, the one who says it's 120 obviously agrees it's worth at least 100, right? So therefore, in that sense, then, so we have a majority over here that agrees, we have a majority over here that agrees it's not worth, that's worth no more than 100. So we have a majority of you that agrees it's worth no more than 100. Yes, it's true. You also, from a different point of view, you have a majority who's saying it's worth not less than 100. But tefasta merubah like tefasta. You don't have any score. You don't have any. You don't have any reason to prove that it's closer to one or closer to the other. Therefore, you have to go according to the lesser amount because everybody agrees the lesser amount is included in the greater amount.
You need a fourth opinion.
But if you don't have available a fourth opinion, I mean, in general, in based in shuffle, you don't have a based in made up of an even number of people. You always have an odd number of people, so that there's no ties. In this case, what we do, whatever. In this case, you don't need to do that. In this case, so Rav Elazar Rav Tzadik is saying, what we do is therefore, on that basis, we say that we know the larger amount definitely includes the smaller amount. So in other words, the one who says 120 would definitely agree it's worth at least 80, and it's worth at least 100. So therefore, fine. So we go according to the 80 and the 100. On the other hand, the one who says it's worth 80 and the one who says it's worth 100, neither of them agree it's worth 120. So in that sense, you have a majority for the lesser amount. Okay, it's svara. There are other explanations. The Ravid says a svara like this. He says, when we say a piece of land is worth 100, think of like in the real estate market. Nobody pays the list price for a house unless they're in a hurry to buy it. Same thing with land. If we say the land is worth 100, we have to assume, and if somebody is not in a rush to buy, he's only going to pay 90. Therefore, it's more logical to go according to the lesser amounts. So a mana has a certain threshold in that sense. The Ramban also explains similarly. He says a mana is a significant amount. A mana is sort of like a psychological threshold. If you have two people who say it's not worth more than a mana, we have to assume that they have a better idea of what they're talking about because a mana, people in general know whether something is worth a mana or more than a mana. A mana is a significant threshold of money. Okay. Fine. Okay, so that explains Rav Elazar Rav Yaakov's shita that you say 9. Okay, what about the Acherim? Acherim Omrim Oifim Shuma Beneinu Mashalshin. We said that the Acherim say that we figure out the lowest and the highest value and we divide it evenly.
Let me ask a question. If it was a different number, if you had, let's say, 90, 80, and 70, how would you say it?
So according to the Rashbam, you would say the same thing. That's according to Rav Elazar. No, that's according to the Ramban. According to everybody else, no. So fine, according to the Ramban, you wouldn't use that svara, then maybe he would say Rav Elazar Tzadik would say differently in that case. I don't know. Okay. Acherim Omrim Oisid Shuma Beneinu Mashalshin. We said the Acherim say that what you do is you figure out the largest and the smallest value, and you divide it by the number of opinions, namely three. So, in other words, you come out 13 or a third. So, similar idea. Kosabri, the Acherim hold, High Ara Tishin Vitzlos of the Tilba Shavya. Essentially, we should assume that this land is worth 93 and one-third Zuz. So high to comma estrim katoi placer total achare. So therefore, again, we would assume that the one who said it's worth 20, meaning 80 zuz, made a mistake, undervalued it by 13 and one third. The high to comma mona. What about the one who said a mona? Really, he would have wanted to value it at more than that. Katoi placer the total achame. He would have thought to say it's actually 13 and a third more. He would have made it to be worth 106 and two thirds. In fact, he would have thought to say more. He would have thought to say, I consider it to be worth 106 and two-thirds. Why doesn't he? V'haydin lo kama. Why did he say that? Why did he say 100? Sabar, because he thinks to himself, mistoi to kama tfina, kula hai achabroi, because he may think to himself that, you know what, that it would be a ridiculous thing that I should be going so much higher than the other guy. He'd be second guessing himself. In other words, if the other guy thinks that it's only 80, how can I possibly think it's worth so much more, that it's worth well over 100, that it's worth 106, that it's worth 106 and some? He wouldn't do that. He would round it and say 100. Now, how does he know what the other one is? How does he know that the other one says 80? So the Rashbam says, because Mistama, they're discussing it between themselves. It's not just the one says 80, we're not talking about a secret ballot over here that he puts in his vote and says 80 and nobody else knows what he said. They were probably discussing it among themselves. So the Dayan who said 100, Shimon, let's call him, knows that Reuven, the first Dayan, said 80. So he thinks to himself, then in that case, it would be ridiculous for me to say 106 and change so much higher than him. Let me cap it at 100.
23%?
It would be 26. It would be 26 over his figure. Tosfos says a different answer. Usually you have, when you have people saying their values, usually the one who's going to hold the lesser value is going to speak up first. So you would expect that Reuven, the Dayan who thought that it's worth only 80, is going to be the one to speak up first. Then Shimon, the one who thinks to himself that it really might be worth as much as 106, he'd be second-guessing himself. You know, once Reuven said 80, where am I coming from? And all of a sudden to say 90, to say 106 and change. And therefore he rounds it down and says 100.
How did he get to 106?
Because we assume that they can make a mistake by as much as 13 and one-third. That's what the Acherim are saying. That's why. If we assume the real... Not 13, yeah, 13, not 13% actually. We're saying essentially the land would be worth 93 and one-third. That's what he's saying, is the actual amount. Because because in other words, again, he says, we shouldn't assume like Rabbi Elazar ben Tzaddik, that one of them is completely out in left field and we ignore his opinion altogether. We should assume that all three of them are somewhere, are at least somewhere in the range. We should not necessarily assume that all three of them are in the range, but at least we should take the third one's opinion into account. Rabbi Elazar ben Tzaddik is saying we completely throw out the highest value. The Acherim want to say, no, we should consider it insofar as that at least we should use it as a basis for the calculation.
But you could think more than 13, you could say 16.5%.
No, but not 1/6 per se. I mean, I don't know what the fraction of what would 13 and a third be from 93, from 93 and a third. I don't know.
Close to 16.5.
Could be. I don't know. It's about 1/7, actually. About 1/7.
Not exactly.
It's just about 1/7, yeah. Anyway, so he's saying, in other words, we do have to take into consideration what the highest one said. The highest one did say 120. We do have to use that, we do have to factor that into the calculation somehow. And that's why, that it must be, in other words, the land must be worth a little more than Rabbi Elazar ben Tzaddik wanted to say, that it's only 90. We must say, therefore, it's 93 and a third. What about one of them said only 80? Okay, that means you can make a mistake by 1/7, by 13 and 30. What about the other one who said 100? We would say, again, really he would have wanted to say 106 and 2/3, but he's embarrassed to say such a high figure when the first one said 80. Therefore, he undervalues it a little bit and says 100. But essentially, we should assume that it's the average between what Reuven said 80 and what Shimon would have said if he had felt free to speak his mind, 106 and 2/3. And again, the average of that is 93 and a third. Okay. Again, the question is, Adraba, ha'ara meyo place of a tilta shavya. Adraba, why shouldn't we add, fine, let's say 13 and a third. Why shouldn't we add that to the middle value, 100? Why don't we say, ha'idakama mona katoi place of a tilta lachori? Why don't we say the one who said 100 is making a mistake by 13 and one third, undervaluing it by that much? So 13 and a third out of 113 and a third, which would be about one-ninth or so. And we would argue on the same logic. The one who says 120 really is making a mistake by the same amount in the other direction. He would have thought to say it's 126 and two-thirds. Over dinu to comma today, and again, he might have actually wanted to say 126 and two-thirds, but he doesn't for the same reason. He second-guesses himself. He might say to himself, when Shimon said 100, never mind Reuven, who said 80, so Shimon said 100, how am I going all the way up to 126? I'll cap it at 120. Yeah. So why don't we say that, and therefore say the land is essentially worth 113 and a third? Again, the answer is like before. Nevertheless, okay, the bottom line is, except for the bottom two ones, the Demeteris may or may, because the same logic as before, neither one of them is saying it's going over 100. So again, the Rashbam's shita, that's a the Rashbam thing, that's a faster mutable, it's a faster. The Raivad's idea that a land that is nominally worth 100 is in reality for somebody who's not in a rush to buy is actually worth less than that. The Rashbam's idea that 100 is a psychological barrier, whatever it is, same idea. Therefore, it's more likely to say it's below 100 than above 100. Okay. What's halacha? Amar Rav Huna, halacha ka'acherim. So Rav Huna says the halacha is like the acherim. So it's 93 and a third. Amar Rav Ashi, the margin of error from the lowest number, yeah. Yeah, okay. Amar Rav Ashi, time of the Acherim lo yadinen. But Rav Ashi says, what are you talking about? We don't even fully understand the reason behind the Acherim. How can we follow the, how can we make the halacha be established like them? After all, I mean, okay, we gave an explanation of them, but still, that explanation is not really so satisfactory.
What was the explanation?
The explanation, we said, is that we ignore the third, we say that even the second one who said 100 really would have wanted to say 106, but
right.
he rounded it down to 100, he lowered it to the second guest himself, etc. Tosfos points out there's a different problem with it also. And imagine if there were only two dayanim, and one of them said 100 and the other one said 120, we would say that it's worth 110. So when the Gemara is asking how would we think that it could be 113, what, because there's an 80 over there, therefore we should make it higher? So the Svara of the Gemara was asking, yeah. Anyway, okay. So according to Rav Ashi, the halacha is not like the Acherim. The halacha is like the Chachamim, the Tanakama of that Dreisa, and indeed that's how it is.
Which is
that we just do, again, according to the Rashbam, we take the median value, we take the middle of the three values that were stated. According to the Rambam, we take the average of the lowest and the highest value.
Divided by two.
Yeah, the lowest and the highest value divided by two. Tanu Dayone Goyla, the Dayone Goyla, which is Shmuel and Kana, taught a Braisa, like the Acherim, Oisin Shuma Benein and Meshalshin, that they make a Shuma between them, and they divide it by three, which is what the Acherim say. Amar Rav Huna, halacha is like the Dayone Goyla. So Rav Huna, again, says on that, the halacha is like the Dayone Goyla. Now, the Rashbam points out, it's not that Rav Huna repeated his statement twice. It's that he said it in connection with one Braisa, and the Gemara, the Chachmei Gemara, applied it to the other Braisa as well. Therefore, the Gemara doesn't ask why he's repeating himself, because he tacked only said it once. The Yeshivalites, when they heard the two Braisas, they said Rav Huna would say the same thing on one as on the other. And again, Omer Rav Ashi, and again, Rav Ashi says the same thing. Time of the Dayane Gola Layadina. I don't understand the logic why the Dayane Gola are saying what they're saying. Why should they be fasting like the Acherim? Hilch Sabdin and Kavasayo. Is it logical to say the halacha should be done like them? No. And therefore, again, he says the halacha is like the Chachamim in the original Braisa, not like the Bolo Rav Tzadik, not like the Acherim, and not like the Dayane Gola. The halacha is that that's the conclusion, is that we just go according to the median according to the Rashbam and the average of highest and lowest according to the Rambam. In Shulchan Aruch, it's brought according to the Rambam. We follow the Rambam. In Shulchan Aruch, it's brought like the Rambam.
Like the Rambam.
So we take the highest value, we take the lowest value, and take the average of the two of them, yeah.
Why did we pass it instead of the Rashbam?
Because the Shulchan Aruch usually passes him like the Rambam, not like the Rashbam. Rashbam is a Rishon, he's a very great person, but he's not necessarily as much of an authority in Halacha as Rambam is. Okay.